Welcome home. We are WNST, Towson, Baltimore. Baltimore positive. We're positively into a short post-holiday week here, but we have home baseball all week long. I'm wearing my Fadley shirt because we're going to be at Fadley's on Friday, eating the delicious crab cakes in the new spot in the new Lexington Market. Be doing the show from 2 until 5 there. Luke will be by early as well. I want to send a shout out to Sue Gunn, who stopped by a couple weeks ago when we had our switch of plans. Come down and see us on Friday. Come and see us anytime. Next week, we're going to be floating around Costas, Coco's. We're going to be at Cooper's next Tuesday in Timonium, Mays Chapel, celebrating Fleet Week, which is happening down in Fells Point 2 weeks from now. So lots of things happening, including Oriole baseball. Luke Jones joins us now. He was at the ballpark on Tuesday night for the Boston Red Sox. Weird week, dude. The Monday afternoon on the holiday. I thought you were at the game Sunday, and the game was in Chicago, and I got my days and nights mixed up, but they're going to lose some games, and they're going to leave the bases loaded with nobody out and strand everybody, and the bullpen's going to blow up in the eighth inning and give up a bunch of runs. It's going to happen. It just happened Tuesday in Baltimore.
It did, and it was a strange game in the sense that early on, neither Bayo or Grayson Rodriguez looked like they had it, and it looked like it was going to be a high-scoring game. Whereas Bayo, after the first inning, settles in. As you mentioned, Orioles squandered a massive opportunity in the sixth inning, and we can get into that. But Grayson Rodriguez, after the first couple innings, where he got hit pretty hard, there was the Devers run-scoring single that was more of the tough luck variety, but got hit hard with the secondary stuff and started leaning much more heavily on the fastball as the outing continued. And he ended up setting career highs in strikeouts and whiffs. I mean, he really finished that outing in a positive way to the point where the Orioles had a chance at 4-3 till they got to the sixth inning. And yeah, they just didn't score any runs, didn't get anything going offensively, or didn't sustain anything offensively after that 3-run first inning. Then the bullpen. I'm always conflicted. We talked about this years ago with Buck Showalter, where you're down a run or two in the late innings. It's still only late May. You still have 4 months to go. How hard do you lean into your best bullpen guys in those spots? And I mean, they brought in Yennier Cano, for example, but it certainly wasn't good at the end. And Keegan Akins, in particular, was not good at all in the ninth inning. But they didn't score runs. You score 3 runs and then you don't score again after the first inning, unless you get sparkling pitching for nine. That's usually going to be a losing formula, and that's what we saw on Tuesday night. Still a chance to win a series now, but certainly after that first inning, very much disappointed in what they did offensively. But we've been talking about it. The Red Sox, albeit kind of hovering around 500 for most of the year. Yeah, their pitching has exceeded expectations. We saw a little bit of that, but got to score more than 3 runs, especially when those 3 runs come in the very first inning.
We don't talk a whole lot about the other team, but where are you on Bayo? We see these young, comparisons to Pedro Martinez. I mean, Pedro and Roger Clemens aren't coming back. Neither's Oriel Cam Boyd at this point. This is what they are. Effectively wild through most of it, and a real ceiling guy in him, right? Like he's a guy they expect to win a Cy Young there one day and be a pile diver.
I mean, look, it's got a ERA of just over 4, so it's not as though he's been incredible. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say that I've watched all of his starts, but I've seen him pitch, against the Orioles. I've seen him pitch a few other times, and he's certainly someone that has ability. He's certainly someone that, wherever he was ranked from a prospect standpoint, they do have high expectations. Is he going to win a Cy Young? I mean, that's a lot to put on any young pitcher, but he has ability, and we saw that. Again, he settled in the way that he did after that first inning, where Colton Cowser drives in a run. Fantastic at bat from Jordan Westberg in the first inning, where he's down 0-2 and just had the approach of a 30-year-old veteran there to just line the ball the other way and drive in 2 runs. But Bayo really settled in there. I mean, he's got good stuff. I think that's evident. He struck out what, 7 guys, walked a couple, hit by a pitch as well, but I mean, he's a good pitcher, and it hasn't been amazing statistically when you're talking about. I think he finished tonight with a 4.18 ERA for his season, but he's shown the last couple of years he has the ability to be a top end of the rotation kind of guy. So, I mean, the Red Sox, They're an interesting team in the sense of how much turnover they've had. I think you look at the bottom half of their lineup, it leaves something to be desired, to state the obvious. They've been good enough to not be terrible in the way that I think a lot of people, myself included, thought that they'd be the pretty clear last place team in the AL East. And, Toronto's exceeded the disappointment far more than the Red Sox and Tampa Bay for that matter as well. So, he's a good pitcher. You're going to run into that. But I mean, let's face it, the Orioles left 10 on base, 2 for 9 with runners in scoring position. And they very much had had their chance to break through in the sixth inning, and they just couldn't do it. So now that's going to happen in the same way that the Orioles get good outings from their good young pitchers. And Kyle Bradish did what he did on Sunday, for example. But again, the Orioles had their chances. They didn't get the job done after the first inning.
Bullpen. We talk a lot about the bullpen and these games where they have a chance to win, and they certainly, in the sixth inning, it doubled down the line, looked like they were going to win the game, right? Or it felt like they had that mojo about them on Tuesday night against sort of a weak Red Sox team. And then you get into the bullpen and Keegan Aiken. Guys struggling in the bullpen. I don't know where the line is for all of this as to what ships out of Vieira and what ships into Vieira, right? In the last week or so. They're going to keep tinkering, and we're going to talk about it every day. And we're certainly going to talk about it on days when they lose, maybe more so than when, they bring in whomever in the seventh, Perez in the seventh, Cano in the eighth, and Kimbrel in the ninth, and they walk home and win 5-2. Those won't be days we talk about it. We're going to talk about it when there's a problem and say, how do you fix the problem? In the case of Keegan Aiken, I've been hearing you talk about him for years. It certainly didn't happen on Tuesday night, and I don't know where. When you're trying to get stability in the bullpen, how long you let guys fail or where you move them to a lower leverage situation, there's not a whole lot of low leverage when you're in ball games every night in the pennant race.
I mean, look, Keegan Aiken had been pitching really well for a while, and you kind of look at the last 4 or 5 outings, not so much. ERA is now ballooning toward that 5 level where he had been, kind of in the 3s. I mean, he's not your highest leverage guy that you're bringing in when it's 5-3 going into the ninth inning. I mean, again, like I said.
Do you trust him is the question, right?
And that's the thing. I mean, do you trust them to pitch in the eighth or ninth inning? No, but that's most of their bullpen guys at this point. I've said it for going back, even before Felix Bautista got hurt last year. I think the Orioles, as their bullpen is presently constructed, I think they have a bunch of guys who I mostly trust to pitch in close games in the sixth and seventh inning, but I don't have that same feeling when it's 3-2 in the eighth or ninth inning. And that's where I keep clamoring. And when I say I'm not saying I'm talking about this in a unique fashion. Most fans feel this way, I think, at this point, and a lot of media as well, that, stands a chance that if you really want to improve your chances for October, that you've got to go out and get a high leverage arm or two. Whether that's going to be someone else's established closer, whether that's going to be someone else's first half of 2023, Yennier Cano. That search is ongoing. I think Mike Elias realizes that. Now he's going to have to pull the trigger at some point in time. I hear some people say the Orioles need to do that now as opposed to late July. I mean, they're th still 34-19. This bullpen, while it's not the best in baseball by any stretch of the imagination, I hear people use terms that it's a dumpster fire and it's a disaster. I think that's a little bit
Well,
much
they
when you
have the
look at it,
means, though,
but
financially and spiritually, to make it among the best if they choose to. They have
well.
means in that position to buy bullpen help or to trade for bullpen help and get it if they choose to this year. They could they,
Well,
their bullpen doesn't have to be the worst.
their bullpen isn't the worst. I mean, it's not. And I hear what you're saying there, but you also need to make sure you know what you're buying. Yennier Cano at this time last year looked like he was the next Mariano Rivera, right? And then we saw that there's been regression to the mean. He's a solid middle to late reliever. Is he a guy that you feel extremely confident in the ninth inning? Well, I see his ERA is 3, but go look at the home runs allowed. Go look at some of the peripheral stats, he hasn't been as good this year. I mean, I think that three is that 3.00 ERA is masking some deficiencies that didn't necessarily show up last year. Mainly, he's given up the long ball, and I don't think he's commanded the sinker as well. So, and that's one of your very best relievers right there that we're talking about. So,
Well,
you
and
know.
Kimbrel was the guy who had to be the guy, and we've been discussing that for 2 months, how much money he makes and what he's capable of doing are, you paid him a lot of money thinking you solved the problem, and he didn't really solve the problem.
No,
Struggled to solve it, yeah.
I don't think anyone, I don't think Michael Elias thought they solved that problem. I think they knew that this bullpen was going to be kind of a living canvas, so to speak, and you were going to try to tinker, you were going to try to bring guys in, you know, that we talked about
Well, you
the
spent $13
newcomer.
million on it. You'd like to think you
No,
solved something.
I would lose respect for Mike Elias as a baseball mind if he thought that signing Craig Kimbrel solved not having Felix Bautista. I mean, Craig Kimbrel at best projection, or anyone else really for that matter, save for maybe the kid in Oakland and what he's doing right now, was not going to be Felix Bautista. So it was certainly a big part of it. You know, I don't want to say it was, you know, an effort in vain. And look, 3 weeks ago, when we were talking about Craig Kimbrel being a disaster, we were talking about how other guys were pitching well in the bullpen. Now it's since then, it's kind of gone the other way. Craig Kimbrel has been really good his last seven times out, and some other guys in the bullpen haven't been as good. So, I mean, this is an ongoing thing. Again, for people to say that the bullpen is an absolute disaster, one, statistically, it doesn't support that it's that bad. Does it need to get better? Yeah, no question about it. I've been saying that since before spring training started. But at the same time, bullpen arms are tricky. It's like the stock market, and you don't want to overpay. Just because you have prospects doesn't mean you want to go out and just start giving them away for guys that you think are really answers for you, and then you get them, and then you find out, oh, that's not quite what I thought it was. So I think part of this is
Well, for the
also.
fans, Kimbrel's that guy. For the fans, maybe not for Elias. Not
What with
that
him?
guy. Not you
Well,
spent that money, you didn't get that guy. You got a guy.
Craig Kimbrel, for the most part, has still been more good than bad this year. I mean, we're judging him on those 2 weeks, which were terrible. But
Dude, I
I
think if
would,
they're going to win the World Series, he's going to be the guy holding the ball at the end.
I don't
Right?
know about that. I don't know about that.
Okay. All right.
Really? I mean,
Maybe.
the Philadelphia Phillies told you that they didn't believe that
Well,
last
then you're
year.
giving him $13 million, and you're afraid of pitching him in October, and you know that going in. I
No,
mean,
no, no. That you're making it an all or nothing proposition. I'm telling you that I'm not convinced that he's going to be the undisputed closer for. I'm telling you that they might go and get someone else's closer. Then Craig Kimbrel might be your eighth inning guy. He's gonna have to pitch important innings. Don't get
well,
me
when that
wrong. I'm not.
happens, I will call that a move of brilliance. If Elias said we got him the whole time, knowing he was really probably going to be the eighth inning guy, and I wouldn't argue that. You and I talked about that in March, that, he's sort of a closer, but he's not. And you're paying him like one, and he used to be. And it's nice to have him there, but he's not, to your point, Batista. Don't we have a different level of expectation there? And we're not expecting Batista to walk in either, but we're expecting competence to walk in and guys he can get three outs.
Sure. No question. But I mean, I'm just saying, you can keep saying that he's making $13 million, and yes, he's making $13 million, but it was also a 1 year deal. And go look at what the Astros paid Josh Hader. That's going out and getting a closer. And look, Josh Hader got off to an awful start this year, and you wonder how that 5 year deal is going to play out. So it's tricky. Again, I'm not saying this to make an excuse for Mike Elias, but you want to make sure that you're not acquiring something that there's regression to the mean, and then it's, oh, this guy's not a whole lot better than what we already have. And like I said, Yennier Cano is kind of proving out to be an example of that. You know, this time last year, he was extraordinary. What he's been since then has been still more good than bad. Let's be clear. I'm not saying Cano's terrible, but has he been that same lockdown, unbelievable 1-2 punch kind of guy that they had with him and Bautista through May, June, July of last year? No. And like I said, his peripherals, he's given up more home runs this year. I don't think the sinker has been as good. And that's your eighth inning guy right there that I'm talking about, let alone talking about Keegan Aiken or CNL Perez or Jacob Webb, whoever. Go down the list of guys that they've leaned on. So they absolutely have work to do with their bullpen. But at the same time, it's not just as simple as, oh, that guy for, name your team, the Chicago White Sox or Anaheim, whoever. That guy has a 1.8 ERA. Let's go throw this prospect and go get him. Okay, that might work, but we also know that there are guys who can have a really good ERA at one point in the season, and then that's not the same thing come September. So they're trying to evaluate, they're trying to see what they have internally, and they continue to monitor the market, and you've got to go out and,
But they don't have a
whether.
system and a solution yet, right? Like they don't have a set way that they want to do it. In a perfect way, by July, you'd have something that felt like, all right, in this situation, this is seventh, this is eighth, this is ninth. They don't really have that yet. They want to have that. They're working toward that, and that's what the Webbs and the Canos and the Kimbrels are about, right? I mean, maybe in his mind, opening day, it's Webb seven, Cano eight. Maybe Perez seven, lefty, righty, whatever it is, and then Kimbrel nine, if we're winning 4-2 in the seventh inning. Like if you're
Although
playing it
that,
that way.
I don't love that way of managing your bullpen in general, because the seventh or eighth inning might be way more important than the ninth inning. Anyway, I honestly think, and this kind of lends itself to what I was saying about Kimbrel, and when I say that my viewpoint would be that Kimbrel's not my automatic ninth inning guy, it's not even because, oh, well, I don't think he's good. Sometimes it's, what are the matchups? What's the other team's lineup? Where are the pockets of left-handed hitters where Danny Coulon might make more sense? I think when you don't have that shutdown closer, and we saw Brandon Hyde navigate his bullpen this way in September last year, post Felix Bautista going down, I think it allows you to match up a little bit more. And look, that worked out for the Orioles last September. Now, do I want to go a full 6 months being forced to manage that way? No. But that's where I kind of say, if you can bring in a couple high leverage arms, whether it's some other team's closer or not, or just their eighth inning guy, or Andrew, think of Andrew Miller a decade ago. He wasn't a closer, but at that point in time when the Orioles acquired him, he was probably their best reliever. And I say that with no disrespect
We
to
could
Zach
get you
Britton that
six
year.
outs in the seventh and
Yeah,
eighth
that's what
inning,
I'm
right?
saying. So that's where I'm a little more unconventional, than just, oh, this is my seventh inning guy, this is my eighth inning guy, this is my ninth inning guy. It's easier to manage a bullpen that way, but I don't necessarily always believe that that's how you optimize the effectiveness of your bullpen. So, that's part of it. Point is, and I've made this point over and over and over, going back to spring training, you can't just have one ninth inning guy. You can't just have one eighth inning guy, because you play too many games for that to
And you're
be.
going to win too much to do that, right?
Exactly. So you don't want to be in these positions. And we talked about this, and this might have been, I don't know for sure, because again, Craig Kimbrel has been so up and down the last 5 years. That's who he's been. He's going to go through another stretch like he had, late April and early May. He's going to have another stretch like that. I'm telling you that right now. Not you. I'm just saying in general. We're going to see that again. That's the pitcher he's
Well,
been
it's
for the
been
last
seven
5 years.
decent ones, and we don't sit here and praise him every day when he goes out and does 1-2-3,
Well, and that's my point. He got off to a great start, and then he had the two and a half weeks where, oh my gosh, I mean, you had people who wanted to get rid of him, and his $13 million salary at that point. But
I still
it's,
marvel all these years later that the baseball team has gotten good and the fans haven't necessarily gotten smarter. So I see stuff on the internet every day and I'm like,
that's
oh
everywhere. I
boy.
mean, that's
Yeah,
everywhere.
that's
I mean,
like.
it's, look, that's fandom. Fan is short for fanatic, and while the takes for to DFA him were crazy, the concern was legitimate, and demoting him out of the closer's role for a couple weeks was legitimate. I had no problem with that. But point is, you need, I would say, at a minimum, and I've used this number, and it's a bit arbitrary, but it's also just understanding how the game works now, and the fact that, even the great starts now
Or
six
six.
innings, maybe seven. 7 innings almost feels like that's become the new complete game, in some ways. And I know there are a few pitchers out there here and there that you'll still see an occasional complete game, but those are becoming so few and far between that I really feel for the eighth and ninth innings in a one-run game, I think you need at a minimum four guys that you really feel strongly and confident in. And that's why I, as much as this new era, this Mike Elias era with Gunnar Henderson and Adley Rutschman and all these great young position players, and that I've still had that nostalgia for where the bullpen was for the Orioles a decade ago, where you had Zach Britton, you had Darren O'Day. Andrew Miller was only here for a couple months. I understand that, but you had him. You had Brad B Brock. So I mean, right there, you had, even though Britton was the closer most nights, you had some other guys that you still felt pretty confident in closing some games when Zach Britton had pitched three out of the four previous games and wasn't available that night. So you need that. And do the Orioles have that kind of depth, that kind of confidence in their late inning, high leverage guys at this point? I think the answer is pretty clearly no. So that doesn't mean that Craig Kimbrel isn't going to be pitching really important games. That doesn't mean that Yennier Cano isn't going to straighten himself out and pitch in really important games. I don't want to shortchange Danny Coulomb, although, he's been a little shaky of late compared to what we're used to seeing from him. Is there enough confidence in Jacob Webb? Is there enough confidence in CNL Perez? No, I mean, there's not. Certainly, and Keegan Aiken, again, he was pitching the ninth inning of a game where they were already trailing two runs. I mean, your win probability in that spot's already pretty low. So do you really want to burn? Are you bringing in Craig Kimbrel to pitch the ninth inning there? No, of course not, is kind of the example I'm using there. So, it's ongoing. And again, has it been as big of a disaster as some fans would lead you to believe? Well, if it would have been, they wouldn't be 34 and 19 right now. I mean, I'll say that much. So, yes, it's an area they need to improve. There's no doubt about that. I'm not sitting here saying that all is well with their bullpen and there's nothing to see here. That would be disingenuous, but you still have to make the right moves. And just because you had the prospects doesn't mean you just go out and start throwing them away for some other team's Jacob Webb or some other team's Yennier Cano, which, Cano's got a 3 ERA. But again, peel back the layers and look at the peripherals. It hasn't been as good. So you want to make sure you're acquiring the right guys. And it's not to say that it can't happen next week or in the next few days, but you want to make sure that you're truly getting something that's real and legitimate for the back end of your bullpen, because it's not going to be cheap. You're not giving away Ramon Arias and getting a lockdown eighth inning guy. You're giving up someone that's a legitimate prospect to get that guy that you're going to feel great about pitching the eighth or occasionally the ninth inning. So, we'll see how it plays out. And as far as Tuesday night's game goes, yeah, the bullpen imploded late, but they were losing going into that. They didn't score any runs after the first inning. So, not you and me, but as a collective group of observers, let's not bury the lead that the Orioles were shut out after the first inning on Tuesday night.
Corbin Burns back to the hill. They get a day down, and then the Tampa Rays in town. We'll be at Fadley's on Friday. Courtesy of our friends at the Maryland Lottery, I'll have Pac-Man scratch-offs to give away. Luke will be with us from 2 until 5. We will not be live. We're just going to kind of hang out, and I think we're going to talk some football as well on Friday. And Hayes and Mullins, again, sort of combined for donuts. We've been on that. We can't stop talking about it because I think it's a story of where the franchise is going with young players. And then there's the Westberg case that every time we talk about him, every night he's doing something that makes him look like a gifted ball player. Like he's a guy who's going to be here 10 years. He might not go to the Hall of Fame, but he's a major league ball player and coming into his own. And we're seeing that with Kowser. We're seeing that with young players. Forget Rutschman and Henderson who are going to the Hall of Fame and they're all going to make $1 million. This is the next level of how they win is, look, you go back, talk about those Yankee teams. You'll talk about, whoever the star, you don't talk about Paul O'Neill. You don't talk about Chuck Knoblauch, but they were great players. And that's going to kind of be where the oxygen is for when you had it, Ray Lewis. It was hard to give oxygen to Suggs and Ed Reed. It's a little bit of that feeling for me, especially with Kowser and Westberg, as these guys emerge and become real big league ball players and guys who are all stars like Mullins and Hayes look a little lost in their late 20s. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Jordan Westberg. You threw out some of the Yankee names. How about Bernie Williams? Not a
Right.
Hall of Famer, but just such a rock solid all-star caliber player at times for a decade,
Would have been the
right?
best player on any other team. He's the fifth best
Yeah.
player on the Yankees, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Jordan Westberg, I watch him on a nightly basis, and first of all, like, if I were just speaking more just as a fan and not someone who's covering it, Jordan Westberg might be my favorite player. Look, he's
He
not the
wears
best
number
player.
11. There's nothing wrong. I already have an 11, all closet full of 11s over here.
But yeah, I mean, obviously Gunnar Henderson's an MVP candidate right now, but Jordan Westberg is just so steady. He plays good defense at both third base and second base, has consistently good at bats. I mean, like I said, that first inning, as much as there was nothing else to write home about offensively after that first inning, that two-strike approach against Bayo in the first inning, two-run single, goes the other way, hits the ball hard the other way on what wasn't, wasn't a terrible two-strike pitch. Bayo got it up a little more than he wanted to, but it was still in the outside corner.
Bayo
Just
was missing spots all night. I mean, it
yeah.
was.
Well, and that's the thing. When you have a live arm, I mean, Grayson Rodriguez, we've seen times where he misses his spots, but when you're throwing 97 or you've got crazy spin on it, you can make it work. That's why those pitchers that are blessed with such arms, Nolan Ryan was a Hall of Famer and at times didn't know where the ball was going within the strike zone. But it didn't matter because you couldn't hit it. But yeah, I mean, you look at this, I mean, Westberg has been an all-star caliber player. I don't know if he's going to make the all-star team because generally we know how that works. If you're not voted in, there's some politics involved. Generally, they'll defer to some more veteran players when it comes to that. But he's had an all-star caliber season. We've talked a lot about Cowser, although, at three strikeouts on Tuesday night, but draws the walks, has the swing and miss, is streaky. But we've also seen him play a very good center field when he's had some opportunities here. And I think that's where the Mullins and Hayes thing becomes that much more interesting. Here's the problem. I think it's Austin Hayes very clearly has become a bench player. He's not playing other than when they're getting a run of some left-handed starters, you'll see him in there. But since he's come back, it's not as though Brandon Hyde has really put forth the effort to shoehorn him back into the starting lineup. He's a bench player. I think the problem with Hayes and Mullins is they both have become fourth and fifth outfield types seemingly overnight. I'm not saying you DFA them or anything like that. Jorge Mateo is a great example of this. We spent 20 minutes talking about Jorge Mateo the other day, and I was at the top of the list of people ready to DFA him last August, and we see what happens here. So just because a player isn't performing now doesn't mean that that won't happen in the future, especially when you're talking about guys that have track records. That said, when you have Colton Cowser and when you have Kyle Stowers, when you have Heston Kerstad at the AAA level, how long of a leash do you give these guys to try to figure things out? And in the case of Mullins, what's helped him to this point anyway was he's still a great defender in center field. But when you're starting to see Colton Cowser can play a really reputable center field as well, maybe not at the same level, but still looking like he can be an above average center fielder, at least not saying for the next 10 years, but at least for this year, at least for the next couple years, then the math becomes a little trickier to justify Cedric Mullins being in the lineup every night. So
Well, then if he
they've got to
does
start.
perform, you're gonna have to pay him anyway, right? So if he performed, he's not gonna be on the team next year in that way unless he's a an extra outfielder. And you talk about guys that are dealable that other teams might use in a pennant race. I don't know, but these guys aren't playing well enough to feel like I'm gonna deal for them and put them into my lineup where I
Yeah.
expect to win 90 games, right? Like,
Well, and it's always tricky because, okay, will you sometimes see trades between two contenders? Yeah. I mean, that happens. But for the most part, it's what? A contender against a team that's selling. So if you're
but not a
selling.
lot of teams are selling last year's All-Stars at a discount rate because they have phenoms at 22. I mean, this is an unusual. This is
No.
unusual. Just
I'm
a,
talking.
not
I'm
just for
talking.
Baltimore. I'm talking about for any franchise to have this many guys coming and pushing out guys that are arbitration eligible All-Stars, who are struggling but can't even get on the field. And in Hayes's case, they put him in an incredible situation to knock runs in, and he's even got Stowers on the bench, mic'd up, saying he's gonna, he's, you know, he's a pinch hitter. Different role, really different
Yeah,
role.
I mean, and but you just kind of said it. I mean, yes, it's unique, I guess, in the sense that these guys were all-star players, and in the case of Austin Hayes was an all-star last year, but they're not performing. I mean, Brandon Hyde wouldn't just be benching them if they were hitting. I would agree, but the sentiment for Brandon Hyde has been that generally and this is the case with most managers, mind you, he's going to defer to veteran players
Yeah, he
as the
likes these guys.
tiebreaker.
These guys have
Yeah.
won games for him.
They'd be playing. You know, they'd be playing if Colton Cowser and we'd be talking about Stowers and Cowser not getting as much playing time if Hayes and Mullins were performing, but they're not. So Hayes has
Yeah, Stowers would
overall.
be, you know, hitting the ball in Norfolk, and he'd be the guy we'd be dealing
Sure.
for a relief pitcher, right?
Sure.
Right,
So,
yeah.
but you know, to go back to your point as far as the unique position the Orioles are in, I was speaking more in terms of even looking to deal those guys. You know, if you're a seller, Austin Hayes is, you know, he's in arbitrate, one more year of arbitration. He's making not great money, but it's real money, you know, compared to someone that's making
Starter money.
the rookie minimum.
Yeah.
And he's been a bad hitter since the All-Star break last year, statistically. So there's not much trade value there. I mean, there just isn't, especially for a team that's selling, right? I mean, you know, if it was a unique contender, you know, contender versus contender kind of a trade where, you know, a team is really lacking outfield depth, you know, could Austin Hayes be somewhat appealing? And you think, okay, maybe a fresh start gets him going. He'll be our fourth outfielder. We'll platoon him with this guy in left field. Okay, you could sell me on that scenario, but he's got to start hitting. He's been better at the plate since returning from the IL, but still not anywhere close to being good enough to justify him playing on a regular basis. And we've talked about this with Mullins. I mean, Mullins had the big hit on Monday, absolutely hammered two other balls that he didn't get the result, but hit them really hard. You know, he's 0 for 2 on Tuesday night. And you bring in a lefty, you're going to the bench to pinch hit for him at this point because he's been completely
But look at
lost
this
against
organization a
lefties.
year ago. They go to Aaron Hicks, right?
Yeah.
Who Hayes and Mullins might be another team's Aaron Hicks, I guess, is, you know, on a different team. They valued him last year because Cowser didn't come, because the younger player, Kerstad, wasn't ready. Stowers, they liked Hicks more than they liked Stowers this time last year, right? Than a prospect. So that kind of player would be where Hayes and Mullins would be for this team or any other team with a value level, right?
Very true, but Aaron Hicks was DFA'd last year. I mean, the Orioles didn't trade anything for him, right? I mean, they signed him because the
Because of his
Yankees let him
contract,
go.
right? Because of
Yeah,
his
the
money,
Yankees let him go. So you know, that's what we're talking about here. I mean, this goes back to why some people out there, even though a lot of fans and even media types thought they were crazy for suggesting this, but this goes back to the sentiment that some fans and some media had to, hey, you've got these guys coming. These veteran players are getting closer to free agency, and you're probably not going to extend them based on the fact that you have Colton Cowser and Heston Kerstad and Kyle Stowers, and you're at some point hoping to pay Adley Rutschman and Gunnar Henderson. You know, again, that's another conversation for another segment, but that's why some people were saying, you know, Cedric Mullins' value may never be higher than it is right now, talking last offseason, whenever. Same with Austin Hayes this past offseason. And people
Yeah,
say,
they
well,
didn't
no,
want to
you're
sleep
not.
without their binky, though. It really
Sure.
speaks to the fact that they didn't really believe in Stowers. They didn't really believe it. They didn't
Well,
believe any of those guys were really ready at that moment enough
yeah.
to not have an Aaron Hicks, enough to not say, well, we got Mullins and Hayes under control. They're affordable. They're all stars. We need to have them. We're not. But now, you know, it's June and it's like, do we need them? Are they going to have at bats? Do they have a place here? Do they have a role here? Are they going to be somebody else's Aaron Hicks? Because that's probably what's going to happen to your point. They're not tradable, right? I mean, in that
Yeah.
way, right?
Well, and look, I'm not at a spot where I'm anywhere close to DFAing either of those guys. I mean, what's interesting is they actually have minor league options. You know, if you really want to get nuts, you know, I'm not saying we're at that point yet, but I think we're seeing it more and more. I mean, they're becoming, and the Hayes has been a bench player since what, the second week of April, basically. And Cedric Mullins, I think with Colton Cowser showing he can play a good center field, I think you're going to see Cedric Mullins on the bench more. And we have the last couple of weeks. I mean, not burying them, but at the same time, and we haven't even mentioned Anthony Santander, who has been better than those guys, but it's not as though he's been great this year and he's been dealing with a sore knee of late. So, you know, that's another conversation. But point is, Colton Cowser to me is the closest thing they have to a write his name in the lineup every single day, outfielder at this point against righties or lefties. And I get it. He'll probably hit at the bottom of the order against the lefty, but he's going to play. And in the meantime, and that's why it was good to me to see Kyle Stowers in the lineup again on Tuesday. I want to see him. I'd love over the next 2 weeks to see Kyle Stowers make 11 or 12 starts. I mean, he doesn't have to play every single day, but I'd like to see him in there most days, including against some lefties, and see how it looks, you know, because it's not as though he was a platoon player in the minor leagues. So, you know, let's see what he can do. And again, you don't know until you're going to play him. And if you're going to continue to get at bats like you got from Austin Hayes on Tuesday night, which, let's face it, those were ugly at bats. You know, that was not. I get that it's difficult to come off the bench as a pinch hitter, but that's your role at this point, right? If you're going to play at all, I mean, Ramon Urias doesn't come off the bench very often to hit anymore. Why? Because he's not showing any ability to hit at this point in time. And there's another guy who probably the moment Jackson Holliday, they deem him ready to return to the majors, I'm guessing Ramon Urias is going to get shipped off. I mean, that's kind of where how it feels.
Well, the minute they deem him ready to get to the majors, Mateo goes back into, you only see him twice a week, right?
Yeah. And Urias is, like I said, probably off the roster at that point in time. So, you know, it's changes are coming, you know, and we've seen this. And this was, you know, we saw it start a couple years ago with Trey Mancini, for example, being dealt, and understanding these guys are getting closer to free agency. Santander's in a contract year. Mullins and Hayes are a year away. So, you know, this time next year, are any of those guys going to be in the roster? I mean, I think that's a fair question, you know.
Well,
So,
that's up to Stowers and Holliday and Kowser too, and Westberg. These guys that have come on and just said, my job, and that's that. And Mullins and Hayes haven't, and that's baseball, right? Literally.
So, and look, that doesn't mean things won't change. As I said, I was ready to get rid of Jorge Mateo last August, and he's kind of been low key one of their unsung heroes this year, especially with Holiday not working out in his first stint,
Yeah,
as we
hell of a
talked
throw
about.
from behind second
Yeah,
base.
so you know, I mean, that again, that's why I'm not giving up on Mullins and Hayes right now or entirely, but no, they shouldn't just be written into the lineup every day. I mean, neither one of them's playing at a level that justifies that. So play all of them, and I'm not burying them completely on the bench either. Let's be clear, but you know, I want to see Couser. I want to see, and we're seeing Couser. So that's almost become a moot point, even saying that, because he's become an everyday player for them. But I want to see Stowers. You know, let me see Stowers 6 times a week. You know, at least 5 or 6 times a week, and let me see what he does. You know, let me see how it looks. Let me see how confident he looks. Let me see if he has more days like he had on Memorial Day. So, you know, we'll see how it works out. Or he could go into a tailspin and Cedric Mullins finally starts hitting, or Austin Hayes finally starts hitting. And then we're having a different conversation a month from now. It's a long season, but when you have a good team, and Brandon Hyde talked about this at length on Tuesday before the game, that it is challenging. And I think, you know, he made the comment, I have 13 guys that I'd like to play. And we know there's a little bit of hyperbole there, and he's not going to, you know, belittle the guys at the back of the roster. But, you know, they have been in a position where young guys and veteran players alike, they've got a lot of options to play, but Mullins and Hayes, they're not hitting. So no, they shouldn't be in the lineup on a daily basis at this point until they force the issue in the way that Colton Cowser did back in April, and basically tell Brandon Hyde, you must play me every day because look at how I'm hitting.
Here's Luke Jones. He is Baltimore Luke. You can find him out on the internet. You can find both of us down at Fadley's on Friday at Lexington Market. We have an incredible Maryland Crab Cake tour schedule put together. Very ambitious the next month. Going to be all over the place, including at Cooper's in Timonium next Tuesday. Thursday morning, we're going to be at State Fair next week before the Orioles take on the Blue Jays up in Toronto. I hope Geddie Lee's behind home plate for that one while I'm having my salmon lunch over at State Fair. We're going to be at Coco's. We're going to be at Costas. We're going to just be, we're going to be at Pappas later in the month in Parkville as well. All of those dates up at Baltimore Positive. You can also find me out on social media. I am Nestor. He is Luke. We are WNST AM 1570 Towson Baltimore. And we never stop talking Baltimore Positive.